You've seen the headlines. Decreased budgets and increased scrutiny mean it's more important than ever for advertisers to produce outcomes. Mountain is helping brands do that by turning the TV into a performance marketing machine. With Mountain, your ads reach tens of thousands of audience segments and get seen exclusively on premium streaming networks. And you can sit back as your campaigns automatically optimize thousands of times a day to drive peak performance. The result? High-impact ads served at the right time, right place, and to the right audience. Visit Mountain.com to learn more. It's vital that brands have a deep understanding of real people, their behavior, beliefs, and ultimately their culture. In this panel from Advertising Week Africa earlier this year, join Dentsu as they chat about how they design for people using bespoke tools that enable them to unpack South African people and their culture quantitatively, qualitatively, and in real time.
So my name is Siv Ngesi. I will be, you know, your honorable speaker in the middle there. Just, yes, you can talk. Yes, you can talk. And I look forward to this particular talk. I had a Zoom call with them. They were so passionate. Nothing was on mute. They were just... So they're so passionate, and I really look forward to you guys hearing what they have to say. For me, I'm usually the guy on stage selling products, but I didn't know there were people behind the scenes doing all this kind of work. So for me, I feel like it'll make me a better entertainer. Please come in, take a seat. Wanna get ladies, they look so beautiful. Just walk in, just willy-nilly. Sir, hurry up. It's taking so long, damn it. So once again, I am the master of ceremonies, you know, in the middle, chatting and acting like I know what I'm talking about. DJ, play me a song in the background as I introduce these incredible people. Today, it's Designing for People. Up first, we have Megan Sale, head of strategy from Chorus South Africa. Please, round of applause for Megan. Yeah. Some music there, DJ. Can you guys clap louder? Emma Odendel, content strategy director, Dentsu Creative. Shichama Molefa, technical specialist and commercials, Dentsu Daughter. Woo! And up next, Joel Rao, CEO of Dentsu Digital Brands, are coming over there. Thank you, DJ. Are you guys ready? First of all, before we even begin speaking about everything, I want to go through and speak about why you're so passionate about this topic.
Should I go first?
You should go first, definitely.
Yeah. Well, I'm known at Dentsu as the data nerd. I get incredibly excited about this. And I don't think I have to tell you why I'm so excited. I can just tell you that at 21 years old, I walked into Dentsu, and I've just turned 30, and I've never left.
Ooh.
So good testament to how excited I am about this.
Says great things for Dentsu as well.
Yeah.
Emma, what about you?
I'm the content strategy director for Dentsu. And to use a little bit of inspiration from Kevin Hart earlier, producing content that people will care about and share is pretty a damn good reason to be in this industry, I think.
Perfect. Shabba, what about you?
Yeah, so for me, I love this because, you know, I was that kid that took the VCR machine apart.
VCR? What's that?
I promise you. I'm joking. But yeah, I'm that guy who likes to take things apart, figure out how it works, put it together again, see if we can improve it. I didn't actually ever improve it, but that's kind of what interests me in data is that, you know, you can pull so many things apart. And put them back together and weave a story through that. So yeah, that's why I love it.
Joel, what about you?
For me, this is actually really exciting because it taps into the yin and yang of my brain. On one end, it's the art, the creativity. I'm an instrument player, I'm a musician. I love the arts, I love entertainment. But then on the other side is the science. I'm a software engineer by profession, in a marketing world. Understanding data and just bringing all these things together is a very interesting thing for me. And so this, for me, is one of my highlights.
So I was doing some research and I read this and I think it is on point. Research tells us that one of the primary principles of brand success is the ability to connect emotionally over the long term, embedding a distinct positive feeling between a brand and its consumer. That's on point.
Exactly.
Because when Kevin came up and said, I was like, ah, that's my friend. Ah, you're so warm. Ah, how's your wife? How are your kids? So I felt I really resonated with it. I'm going to start with Megan. She's very passionate. They said on the Zoom call that you would want to say the most. tell us about Connected Consumer Survey, CCS, please.
So CCS is Connected Consumer Survey, or my baby, as I like to refer to it. And it's Dentsu's proprietary audience understanding tool. It's such an amazing piece of data because it allows us, from a Dentsu perspective, through markets like South Africa, Nigeria, Ghana, Kenya, to really, really unpack humans, to understand them across over 180,000 attributes, which you don't even have to be in data to think that that is very cool. That's a lot of attributes. You know, I think we get to unpack everything about these people, from what they are interested in, to their media behavior, to their demographics, to what they think about certain brands. And for me, that as a strategist, that is invaluable. And then on the other hand, we have it's sort of a two-fold tool, which is understanding humans, but then understanding how to plan effectively against them. And that's where the data side of me gets really excited. I love the numbers. And being able to understand how we've captured a consumer and then use media in the most effective and efficient way is the sweet spot.
So what makes CCS different to other data sources that exist in Africa already? She uses words like exciting and cool for numbers. I love that.
Look, I think other than the amazing minds that sit behind the tool itself is designed in a really interesting way. So I think from a media perspective, we are lucky in the industry. We have a number of tools that our industry has banded together to provide. And those are amazing, and they give really interesting data. But what they often lack, or what they don't go deeply into, is the emotive side of humans. You know, they can tell us how many people they are, where they live, what age they are, but they can't tell us, you know, what their fears for the future are. They can't tell us what their future plans are. And CCS is designed to do exactly that. It's designed to get into the psychographics of...
What's a psychographics? Please, I'm here for you guys.
Okay, so a psychographic is really just the things, the human things that make people tick. How do they feel? How do they think? What do they want? What do they not want? It's all of the data points that are harder to quantify, but are almost more important than the numbers. And CCS is built on those data points. I mean, the important parts of CCS are built on, as I said, passions, interests, the understanding of their likes and dislikes. And then it takes those a step further, right? And it starts to marry that with channels and how people feel about channels, how people, what kind of recognition goes into different channels, you know, how the person feels when they see a certain brand. And you'll notice I'm talking a lot about feeling and emotion, because I think that is what is key. And that is really what sets us apart.
How can brands use CCS in the best way possible?
Well, I think it leads on exactly from the point of emotion. I think, and I was so happy to hear Ty mention humor in the first session, because I think from a South African perspective, and actually a global perspective, the thing that we've moved away from in advertising is people's feelings, emotion. You know, I'm doing a lot of work right now, reading a lot of books on system one thinking, which is really the instinctual thinking that humans go through rather than the logical thinking. And from an advertising perspective, we've moved so far into this logical thinking space. We give consumers all of the data points and the options and the prices and the reasons why our quality is better. But we've moved so far away from telling them, connecting with them on an emotional point of view. And, you know, I saw my colleague shared with me a really amazing piece of data that showed that over the last 10 years, the amount of awards in the advertising world that have been won for humor has absolutely decreased. And the amount of awards from a sustainability perspective or purpose perspective has increased, right? And that is great that awards from a purpose perspective are thriving. But it shouldn't be at the detriment of things like humor. If we look at
Does that mean we're being sensitive? Are we more sensitive now than it used to be, so people don't want to offend people?
No, I think the advertising world has become so frightened of not ensuring that we have listed every single unique selling point that we have as a brand, that we're too frightened to make humorous adverts. If you look this, you can see the same chart going for comedy versus horror genres. Exactly the same. About 10 years ago, interest in horror genres went up. And I think we've moved so far away. Sorry, this is a really long-winded way of telling you.
I got you.
He said I'd like to talk a lot, I do. It's a long-winded way of saying that if you unpack what goes behind emotive advertising, it's things like fame, feeling, and fluency, right? You want to make your brand famous. You want it to be fluent in the minds of consumers. And you want your consumers to feel something when they're interacting with your brand. And how on earth, especially in a country like South Africa, are we meant to instill feeling if we don't understand consumers, right? And that is what CCS enables us to do. It enables us to understand humans. And it's only through that process that we're ever going to get to a point where we can actually emotionally connect and drive brand results, right? This isn't separate to driving amazing ROI. This is what drives it. And that, I think, is how clients need to start thinking and brands and partners of Dentsu need to start thinking about how we best utilize our tools that we have available to us, because they are amazing.
It's definitely must be quite difficult, because we live in a time currently in the world, if you put up a commercial that goes, an apple keeps the doctor away, they're like, what about the peach? You know, everyone is always arguing about something else. It must be very, very difficult. If you're over there and you have any questions to ask, please put up your hand, and we'll get a mic to you, and you can answer any question you want while we're speaking. Just try to keep the engagement going. So Chaba, let's talk about Zeitgeist. Everyone says you are the person for that particular one. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it more, unpack it.
All right, so Zeitgeist is a proprietary tool as well to Dentsu. And first, maybe I should start by describing what the word actually means.
I was about to say, because it sounds like something.
Something, yeah. But it comes from a German word. And what it means is it's almost to say what is the cultural impact of a certain time. So the tool is built with that in its essence. So it's about trying to figure out what the zeitgeist of the moment is. And just to give an example, we would say the 20s, the roaring 20s, the zeitgeist of that is think of movies like The Great Gatsby, you know? That's kind of how you would put that together. And so what the tool tries to do is try to do the same thing just for our time now, yeah.
So why did Dentsu create Zeitgeist?
So, yeah, it's a very interesting story because it actually grew from a point where in Africa, I mean, we've always known that with global tools that are available, there's always gaps in not only measurement of data points, but also with how consumers are actually speaking to specific content. So it was born out of trying to figure out what the consumer on the ground is actually saying. And by that, I want to say it's almost an extension almost of CCS, if you think about it in that way, in that you're trying to figure out sort of those thoughts and feelings and try to build those in a way that a brand can use in whatever fashion, in their strategies, in their creative. And yeah, that's literally why this tool exists. And I'm very excited about it, actually, because it's... Yeah, it's such an amazing tool that unlocks so much information if you use it in the correct manner.
Okay. Now, for the people who don't understand anything about it, tell us more about how it works and the outputs of it.
Yeah, so how it works is, I mean, you definitely do need the inputs, and I'll like to extend with the CCS example, right? So What we would do is take those thoughts and feelings from those consumers and we'd input them into Zeitgeist. And what Zeitgeist does, it actually uses a bit of AI in the back. And what it does is it actually takes, and in fact, before I get into that, we look at specific channels with news articles, we look at social, and the biggest one is we actually look at radio, because radio is like actual conversations with people, right? And what the
radio. Still relevant in 2023.
In Africa.
No, I need to hear this, guys.
In Africa, it's one of the biggest, it's still one of the biggest.
And the most influential one.
Don't even get me started on radio.
Yeah.
So good.
Is it still that important?
So talk shows are so rich in information, and that is what the power behind Zeitgeist, right? So what we are able to do is get these conversations from these people, weave together what's been said, and the AI in the background, what it does is it actually breaks out into concepts. So it will break out what's been said on radio, in news articles, on social, break it out into concepts to say, actually, these are the concepts behind what people have been saying, right? So it's AI, it's been trained, and it's on this iterative learning process, right? So it's able to then decipher that, okay, let's say, I mean, I've actually got a good example with an alcohol brand we worked with, is we input alcohol-centered things, and one of the things that came back conceptually was, I don't know how to say this word properly, but psilocybin.
It's not your language, don't worry. Don't worry, it's not your mother's tongue. Yeah.
But the interesting thing about that is that, I mean, the input with that was never about drug abuse and controlling your sort of, what's the word? Your hormones in any way. But because people are talking about alcohol abuse and are talking about different factors, these are the concepts that start to pull through. And that's what I love about that tool about Zeitgeist is you're able to unlock things that if you went onto social and searched for this, you would never find it. Mm. Because there's no conceptual link between alcohol and psilocybin. But the brilliant machine that is Zeitgeist can actually put that together.
I think you love Zeitgeist.
Oh, I do. I absolutely love Zeitgeist.
How does Zeitgeist differ from other insight tools? What's the difference? Because I'm sure there are other insight tools around there.
Yeah, so I mean, I think I've spoken quite a bit on the differences. But I think one of the main ones I really want to highlight is the radio element, right? Because the radio element, I think, is one that is often forgotten, especially in the African region. And we must remember that you are actually speaking, if you're looking at talk radio, these are real people calling into the radio station to speak. And actually, one of the other key tools that I did not even mention, and I can't believe I didn't, is that embedded in Zeitgeist is a forecasting tool. Mm. So with those concepts that I've actually mentioned is you're then able to say, okay, in 14 days, is this concept going to be relevant? And you're actually able to lay that out and picture that. And as a strategist, as a creative, it is such a powerful way to either leverage on the concepts or to make a pivot if your messaging hasn't been working correctly.
So how often do you guys write?
So I like to say that the data speaks for itself.
Marketing terminology. The data speaks for itself.
The data speaks for itself. But I mean, I think if you look at it from the lens of, you know, you're essentially listening to what people are saying. Mm-hmm. So your accuracy is so much higher because this is what people want. Mm-hmm. And this is what they're actually speaking about. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I can't really quantify it, but I can give an example on how effective it has been. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one that you will pretty much enjoy.
First of all, this example is about to give is on point because I'm actually part of the particular brand that he's working with, and I'm actually one of the faces for it, and he just told me that they worked with them. And I was like, but they acted like it was their idea. So it was actually Zeitgeist.
So what happened with that is we had Supersport via the URC, United Rugby Championship, come to us and speak about, like they were having a challenge with viewership, and actually filling seats in stadiums, right? Especially in South Africa. So they were kind of trying to figure out if their standpoint of North versus South was actually working. And so what we then did is we went into Zeitgeist and actually tried to figure out what people were talking about in terms of the ERC. And, you know, the greatest insight there was, I mean, it sounds so, no, it sounds like it's so obvious now, but the insight then was just people only cared about their team. Mm. People didn't care about anything else. They just wanted to know where to watch the Stormers play against. They don't actually care who they're playing against. They wanted to know about the guy on the injury list. When is he coming back? Mm. You know, that's the kind of content that they wanted to hear or to read about or to talk about. And I mean, once we fed that back into the team, we actually, I mean, there's a case study out there somewhere that we've curated, but we actually managed to get people into stadiums. The teams from the SuperSport angle actually started having cameras in the locker rooms, and they started creating all this content, especially in the bye weeks where there is no rugby. Then there's content now that sits in there that says, that still speaks about the team, and then your users, your consumers are actually now engaging in the whole brand of URC where they weren't before, and yeah, filling the stadiums.
So it's quite interesting that you talk about that, because in the beginning, the first year of URC, no engagement at all. We were shooting content, and it was all about the Northern Hemisphere versus the Southern Hemisphere, and we were doing all these things, and we weren't getting any numbers. Stadiums were empty, the rugby was boring, and this year, we've literally sold out shows, we've been going through December, and even now, there's a game this weekend, DHL Stormers versus Vodacom Bulls, and it's on like 35,000, and initially, you were lucky to get 3,000. Yep. And what we are talking about is the injury list, we're talking about different players versus different players, the potential of making it to the Springboks. So it wasn't SuperSport, it was you.
Okay, Sharp.
I'm going to talk to my boss.
It was.
I was going to talk to him.
Yeah, it was co-creation.
Yeah. Co-creation. Co-creation. Okay, okay. Collaboration.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, all right. Now, I'm going to move on to Emma, which we actually realized we're from the same hood, and we have friends in common. Let's talk about unpacking content creators and conversations of leaders, conversation leaders. That's been quite huge, of having content creators, people out there creating authentic content, and sometimes not creating very authentic content. Mm-hmm. How is Dentsu involved in that field? Because I think that's quite an important field.
So Sachaba and Meg have spoken so much around the data, right? But that's only half the story. What's really important to start painting profiles of who these people are is also to understand deeper emotions around what keeps them up at night, what gets them up in the mornings. And that's really where content creators play an incredibly important role, is combining data with craft, bringing in that cultural fluency, so working with content experts that are in those rugby locker rooms or are sitting on the radio talk shows. They're immersed in those conversations. They often know about those conversations before they even happen. And it's about being on the pulse of those trends and then having so much richer information that we can then carry through to our content and creative campaigns.
So how's Dentsu set up to do that?
Well, that is really around having a network of content creators, a lot of journalistic expertise. So in particular, our team in Cape Town is set up with subject matter experts. So for argument's sake, we work on a beauty brand. We will bring in beauty content creators who are leaders in their fields, who will curate and work with the content to deliver what we know will resonate with our audience.
So we're hearing the fact of a word that I've never heard before, but I've learned about it and I Googled this, that audiences aren't homogenous anymore.
That's true.
English, eh? Not even a private school. Eh? Tell us about what homogenous means, firstly, and how audiences aren't homogenous anymore.
Right, so that, again, it comes down to a lot of data and understanding around the fact that audiences don't all look the same anymore. There's no blanket monoculture that we can target. We need to be looking at subcultures, and we really are seeing this within the audience coming out of the pandemic. In the current environment, we're seeing a lot of, in particular, younger audiences rebelling against authority, against traditional power and privilege structures. You only need to look at even period dramas like Bridgerton. I see you Bridgerton fans, to see how those traditional narratives are being subverted, right? And it's within the subversion of these narratives that subcultures are emerging around particular areas and subject matters and niches. And there's a real move towards world building within these subcultures. So creating a world around your passion point, for example, on Roblox, or creating a vision board using Pinterest's new features. And again, content creators are the ones that are best placed to insert themselves into the world because they've already got credibility and authority within those worlds. Whereas brands, on the other hand, you try and tap into a subculture, because now you're hearing that homogenous is no longer a thing. Tap into a subculture and you're not going to look particularly authentic or credible unless you're working with someone, a content creator typically, who understands what really works and what is going to be most relevant to those people.
So what's the best way for content creators to actually work and get the stats that brands are looking for? Because I'll give you a terrible example, but I do a lot of work for alcohol brands.
Yeah.
I've never touched a drop of alcohol in my life. They shouldn't be working with me.
Yeah.
But I gotta feed my family.
Yeah.
So I say yes. Yeah. How can we improve the relationship between brands and content creators to make it better and to get the numbers that the brands want?
100%. I think what you're saying really comes down to a debate, in fact, that I have with a lot of my colleagues often around authenticity. You know, how authentic is it for a content creator to potentially work with you, or a beer brand to work with you if you don't drink beer? Just
too late
it out
now.
There. I don't want to affect your paycheck at the end of the month.
Done.
It's fine, I'm done.
But I think influencer marketing has a real problem at the moment. In fact, that's one of the reasons I'm quite passionate about influencer marketing, is that there's a real cookie cutter approach. All influencer marketing looks the same, sounds the same. We've all seen the beauty queen, who's now a gorgeous mom, holding a bottle of cleaning detergent that saved her life. And you know, she's got her pristine children running around behind her, and I know my children do not look like that, and my house certainly does not look like hers, yet somehow this cleaning detergent is going to change my world. I don't buy it, and I don't think any of the audience does. So why are we pushing that out there, especially when, you know, we're in this crisis period of rising costs, load shedding, etc., and we've got these aspirational goddesses as influencers pushing out content that doesn't look real. Mm. So how do we, as brands, as agencies, fix that? And I think that's really, for me, there's a massive importance in doing that.
So how are brands getting it right? The brands who are getting it right?
The brands who are getting it right, I think, partner with the right influencers who have values aligned, okay, naturally. And it's also about giving the influencers quite a bit of runway to have some creative freedom. So asking potentially leading questions of them, asking them what content best resonates with their audience, and then allowing them to run with it. And we tend to find that really, in authentic influencer marketing, is the best way to drive results.
Okay, my last question for you, Matt. Currently, I'm struggling the most with Instagram holding and strangling our numbers and our views on social media. So if I post a particular picture, usually it'll get me 10,000 views. Currently, you can see Instagram's like, you're getting paid for this?
Yes.
You're only going to get 10. Mm-hmm. Do brands know that this is happening? Because for me, my results sometimes, I show brands, I'm like, usually I'm getting 10 times more than that, but now I'm not.
Hello, TikTok.
Hurt my feelings.
I'm too old for TikTok.
But see, listen, you know, it's not all loss for you, the creator, because with TikTok coming into the space, one of the things that Meta has realized is that they've been focusing a lot on the brands and forgetting the creator.
Okay.
TikTok came in the other way around and said, we're going to focus on the creator and let the brands, you know, quote unquote, have to fend for themselves, have to pay for it. Instagram is actually changing that right now. You know, about a month ago, they actually announced that they're going to be very much creator focused as opposed to being brand focused. So it's not all lost. But what I'll advise you, though, is you definitely want to have your audience on TikTok built up. And more importantly, YouTube Shorts is now being prioritized over other channels.
Okay. Yeah. All right, I'm going to try TikTok. We have a question from the audience. Lady in white.
Yes, can you hear me? Oh my God.
Loud and clear.
Thank you so much for the insights. So I'm a graphic design student at Vega, and I also want to venture in the content creating. So I just wanted to find out, as a content creator, how do I approach the brand in a professional manner with my content? Do I create a portfolio, or do I come as I am? And what's the best way to approach a brand if you want to do a collaboration?
Someone?
Yeah, I'm happy to take that. I think, you know, there are a lot of people that wanting to break into content creation. And I think the first thing to start with is, of course, to interrogate your own platforms, your own channels, your TikTok and Instagram feeds. Are you putting out content there that is of a quality that you're proud of? Have you identified very clear subject matters and interests? You don't have to be everything to everyone. Having a very clear vision and values is really helpful. And doing that to build up a profile within a niche will mean that brands will automatically start to gravitate towards you for your credibility and authority in that space. If you're wanting to reach out directly to brands, you need to stand out. What are you going to offer that's going to be a bit different to what they're getting currently? What unique angles can you bring to the content that they're not currently seeing? And how can you be a bit braver than some of the influencer material that they're producing currently?
All right. Joel, can you talk about success stories throughout the continent and how you've been involved in influencer marketing? Let's talk about the good stuff and some great stories.
Where do I start?
From the very top.
I mean, there are quite a number of success stories that we've had. The one that actually pops out in my mind is a Netflix case study that was quite interesting for me personally. I mean, the previous speaker who was on stage said, you know, for those of you who are in this room, Netflix, Amazon Prime, MultiChoice is like probably a 1%. A lot of the consumers that are out there are actually on free-to-air channels. And one of the interesting opportunities that Netflix saw was that what if we actually curated pieces of our content and handed it over to these consumers to test it out and build their understanding of the platform, and they can be able to start using it if we offered it to them for free. And it was only limited to Android devices. What was quite interesting for us was when we checked out the data and the tools, radio was a very big influence.
That blows my mind. I promise you, that blows my mind.
I knew it.
Because for me, I would think that radio speaks, and then if you're listening, you hear it, but then it passes.
Yeah, but
can you rewind radio?
What was really interesting about it is that, first and foremost, that consumer base is actually listening to radio. But what was really interesting is that over and above radio, the other touch point was the community cinemas. So I don't know, in the villages, you know, what you tend to see is people go into this community video shops where they sit down and they watch a movie, but they're not watching it in English. They have a narrator on the back end sort of narrating like a football match.
Yes.
You're right? So we got one of those guys who narrates those movies to be an influencer for us. And what we started doing is rather than putting out Netflix trailers traditionally the way they would put it, we started having these voices and these influencers like narrate through the trailers, and it was a massive success. Over and above that, we started seeing how they can actually be involved with the community, and we partnered with this content creators called Huruma Kids, who actually recreate trailers.
Oh, they're so good.
Yeah, you've heard of them.
Oh, they're so good.
Yeah. So we actually took them, and for International Film Day, we used the children to actually recreate a Netflix show, very popular Netflix show. And it was so much welcome. And so suddenly, rather than coming into the market and saying, hey, we're Netflix and we're here, they're coming in and saying, we're Netflix, we're here, we understand you, we hear you, and we've packaged this for you. And it was an instant success. It was so successful that the model that was used in Africa, for the first time, they opened it up in Vietnam. And so it's a model that Netflix is taking all over the world whenever they're doing this. And that's just an example of how we use influencer marketing.
So, Joe, when creating a campaign across regions, how do you coordinate the message at scale?
So for you to be able to coordinate messaging at scale, you require your organization to actually be integrated. And that integration is really important. We've talked about, you know, not breaking down the silos. You know, Kevin talked about, you know, bringing his teams together. You know, we sort of see that as a massive advantage, whereby you need to break down the silos, open communication lines. But understanding that each region, each country has a different cultural dynamic that we need to understand. Now, long gone are the days where a brand would sit at the top and say, this is the message, these are the models, this is who you need to use and run it in your country. Gone are those days. We see that there's a need for brands to actually have their fingers on the pulse of culture in each market and then nuance their campaigns towards those cultural realities to be able to actually drive success. So for us, we see integration at scale being the one key thing that allows us to be able to do it. And at Dentsu, this has actually been our way of working, you know, for some time now.
How do you convince the Americans and the English people that, hey, this is Africa, it's not the same, they don't drink tea here, drink ombud. You know what I mean? How do you get the message across that it's different, we have different cultural differences, and how you get them to listen to you?
So back it up with data.
The data is one thing, but you know, sometimes it's interesting, you go with your data to the rooms, and they say, but we have our opinion. Okay, fine, run with your opinion, and then see yourself fail, and then come back and say, okay, now we want to listen to you. But that notwithstanding, I think what's really important is, and Mondelez is actually a really good example of this, where they came with a big campaign and they said, you know, we want to run in your market without necessarily testing it out. And so if you don't apply that data layer on top of it, and we like giving examples of brands that have massively failed.
Okay.
And then coming back to them and saying, hey, we believe that you need to actually culturally nuance the messaging around your campaign towards this market. So the messaging in Dakar would be very different from the messaging in Accra, would be very much different from the messaging in Cape Town, from Nairobi, and so on and so forth. And so it allows you to be able to actually utilize not just that cultural nuance, but actually amplify it with the cultural influences, and that then gives it validity and credibility in that setting. And so more often than not, you'll realize that brands that actually adopt that methodology, if you ask the people on the street, do you think this is a global brand or this is a local brand? I'll say, this is a local brand, this is our brand, because it was culturally nuanced towards them. And it's an ecosystem that needs to be understood.
So you're trying to tell us that the Americans need to realize that Africa is a big place and we're not all the same.
We're not all the same.
Very simple.
In fact, I dare say that any player who's looking to get into this market needs to actually engage the local people, see what is already there in the ecosystem before coming and dropping a brand here. Absolutely important.
Can we take one more question over there? One more question? Right in the front.
Hi. Thank you so much for your time and sharing. I'm sure we're all learning something from all of you. I just have one question. You guys keep talking about this data, the CCS. Do you have an annual report? Can we download it for free? How does it
work? For free? Did you say for free? What does this look like?
How do we get this research that you keep talking about on the platform? And thank you for your time.
I'll take that.
Go for it.
First and foremost, it's not free.
Let me just get
very clear. It's not free. However, if you're a client, we can be able to actually offer these services to you for free. To some degree. However, to answer your question, yes, it's actually updated every year. We look at some of the psychographic questions that are actually put out to our target consumers. We're able to actually, you know, see what changes have happened over a period of time. And so we try and update this across different cities in different countries around Africa.
All right. Last comments from each of you, and then we have to leave the stage. Last comments, Megan?
Oh, last comments. I think, if anything, I hope that you know, what you take away from this panel is that we have to be building with emotion at the core of what we do as brands. And you've seen how we've got the capabilities to do that. We've got that amazing base layer of CCS data. We've got Sachaba's amazing Zeitgeist tool. And then we've obviously got the amazing How many times can you say amazing?
Say amazing again, because you are amazing.
We've obviously got our creatives, and I just think it's such a, I'm really excited. It's amazing.
Emma, what about you? She's amazing.
I'm completely caught off guard with closing comments, but I think, you know, I think in whatever we do and whatever content is created, so the principle that people trust people should be core to whatever we do. And I think that speaks true to when we look at the data, when we look at creative from a purely creative point of view, is that ultimately, how do you make your brand human is key.
Shama?
I think on my side, I think I'd like to sum it up in three words. I hope it's three words, but.
Oh, no pressure, let's go.
It's, okay, we're starting now. Building authentic culture. I think, we've all spoken about those three words to some degree, and I think for me, those three words are the ones that can sum it up.
Joel, and you?
Man, it's an exciting time to be alive. With all this happening, you'd be left out if you don't adapt. So let's adapt.
So from a personal question for me, I think South Africa is at a very interesting place at the moment. I think we need people to stand up and really, really fight and to actually make people accountable. How can we use your tools to better South Africa? Because it has so much potential. I'm sick and tired of people talking about potential. It's time people get their hands dirty, use what they have to be able to help the state of this nation. How can your technology help us get into a better place as South Africans? And I think it needs to be done ASAP, and everyone needs to utilize their tools to be able to get us into a better place. No pressure. I know it wasn't part of the questions, but how can we use the technology to improve the state of this country?
Who wants to take that?
I think I can add in something.
Go for it.
I beg.
But again, it goes down to what all of us have really been saying is, you know, from a zeitgeist perspective, is what are people talking about, you know? And for me, I think we need to challenge brands to actually go on this journey, because actually as Dentsu, we do stand quite a bit in terms of social empowerment. Mm. And I would really love to challenge brands to stand up with us. Mm. We've got the tools that tell you what the consumer is saying. So let's stand and actually try and make this difference.
I think it's not just a South African issue, by the way.
Yeah. But I live in South Africa.
Yeah. I can tell you for a fact, it's actually a predominantly African issue that we're facing. And if we really want to be the change that we want to see as brands sitting out here, I think it's time for you guys to start looking at how brave you can be. The data is just a tool. The data is always going to be there. The consumers are speaking. We are listening. We've given you the data. How brave are you going to be able to actually shift the conversation, whether it's around sustainability, whether it's around equality, you know, aspects around gender? I think it's really important for brands to start being brave and start having these conversations. And it's not just internally, but also, you know, be authentic enough and say, this is who we stand, this is who we are, and this is what we stand for.
Yeah. Yeah. Guys, thank you so much. Round of applause for this incredible panel. I hope you learned something. Any questions, please ask them away out. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider subscribing to it, sharing it with your friends and colleagues, and rating it on your podcast platform of choice. The TV is no longer just a brand awareness play. With Mountain's self-serve connected TV ad software, you can get real-time data-backed insights that take the guesswork out of TV ad measurement. With Mountain, you can track your connected TV ad performance down to the last decimal, compare it to your other channels with leading web analytics integrations, and even see which viewers are taking the next step to visit your website or make a purchase, regardless of what household device they use. Visit Mountain.com to learn more.